session this afternoon is look at how the land was viewed. In the Old Testament, the land was viewed differently than we view land. And we need to see that. How the land was viewed. Number one. Even though, and I'm talking about the land, I don't mean the land as in the environment. I'm talking about the land of Palestine. How it was viewed. How the land of Palestine or Canaan was viewed. Two balancing thoughts. The land was gained by conquest. The land was viewed as gained by conquest. The roots of that are in the book of Joshua. And in the book of Joshua, they not only took the land, but, and let me put the rest of my statement, the land was gained by conquest, and it was also an allotment from God. And I guess our two key words would be conquest, allotment. It was gained by conquest, but it was an allotment of God, and therefore it was given by Him. For example, the first half of Joshua. The first half of Joshua, and that would be up through, I believe it's chapter 12, if I'm wrong, correct me, but Joshua 1 through 12 shows the conquest. And also, side by side, is the fact that it is a gift. For example, go to Joshua chapter 1. Notice how the land was considered as a gift from God. And this makes Israel different than all the other lands. So that Joshua chapter 1 verse 2, Moses my servant is dead. Now therefore rise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. So notice it was a gift from God. However, as we move on toward the middle of the book, they had to take it for God. It was a gift from God, but the conquest had to occur. Verse 3, every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you. Canaan as a gift of God, but it had to be won by conquest. Verse 11, pass through the camp, command the people, saying, prepare provisions for themselves, where within 3 days you're to cross this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God is giving to you to possess it. And that is a fundamental fact about Palestine. When the argument comes up that, well, the Arab possessed it first, that is not the view. You can trace throughout the Old Testament and you will find this, my land. And the my is a reference to God. And therefore, when you talk about who has a right to Palestine, you got to go back to the roots. Palestine is God's land, and He has chosen it to distribute it to the Jewish people. Now, when you come to the second half, you move from conquest to the division of the land. And so the land divided comes in from 14 on to the end of the book. Now, there were two things by way of background that are important. It was divided by line and by lot. And we need to understand line and lot. Line was the way they determined boundaries. Who gets what? And it was very simply a measuring line from point A to point B, and that pointed out boundaries. The lot determined possessors. The line laid out the boundaries. It didn't assign possessors. The possessors were then assigned by lot. Now, several things that are important. First of all, what was a lot? Roughly, the lot was equivalent to the roll of the dice. Not a really good analogy, or so to speak, pulling of straws. Now, there was a different view about the lot in the Old Testament. If you would, say, roll dice or flip a coin and say, heads, it's mine, tails, it's yours, and flip it and get heads, do you believe that that lie of the coin was determined by God? Well, ultimately, in His sovereignty. But I would not. Do you ever determine the will of God by casting lots? The last time the lot was ever used, remember where that was? Was in the choosing of Matthias in Acts. There is no casting of lots in the New Testament. There's another dispensational distinction, by the way, between old and new. All the way through the old, clear up to Acts chapter 1, the lot was viewed as expressing the will of God. From that point on in the church age, there are no lots, and that's important. But the lot, first of all, was viewed as under the sovereign control of God. So the lot was viewed as indicative of the will of God. And you would cast it. And for that, we should look at Proverbs 16:23. Proverbs 16:23. This was the Old Testament view. This was the way the land of Canaan was divided about among Manasseh and Judah and so forth. The lot is cast into the lap, but its every decision is from the Lord. It was indicative of the will of God as they understood it in the New Testament. The last use of the lot is found in Acts 1, we'll not go to it, Acts 1, 26. Nothing past that. Now, with this as a background, since God determined by the lot who dwelt where and where the tribes were, and since He determined your property boundaries by the line, what would your view be of your property? Your view would be you are a caretaker of it. Now, let me show you some background to that. Look at Psalm 16, verses 5 and 6. 16, 5 and 6. Psalm 16, 5 and 6. Now let's suppose that you're an Israelite and you're getting, your tribe had been assigned, and within the assignment of your tribe would be the assignment of the property that you were going to get. And we're going to say, okay, we'll lay out your lines from here to point B, from point B over here, and part C over here. The way it worked out, some folks looked and said, well, I accept it, but it's all rocks. And some people got all rocks. That's the way, listen to this, that's the way the line fell to you. Others would say, wow, I got this beautiful verdant piece, and my boundary lines are wonderful. I love the way my land is marked off. Well, in expressing blessing that you'd receive from God, You might say something like David did in Psalm 16, 5 and 6. The Lord is the portion of my inheritance and my cup. Thou dost support my lot. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. Now, in our culture, someone say the lines are falling to her in pleasant places, you probably mean she's got a great figure. But in the times of their culture, when your whole income depended on what your land could produce, and if your lines have fallen in pleasant places, what are you saying? I have been greatly blessed. And I don't think David here, in speaking poetically, is necessarily talking about his physical heritage. You back off, and you're talking about his great blessings that he has, and he's expressing it in terms of my property lines are really neat. God's blessed me greatly. And therefore, that would be the idiom that would carry, and I would paraphrase verse 6, the lines have fallen me in pleasant places, by saying, I have been richly blessed. But he does it in terms of their culture. Now, they had a way of marking boundary lines. And if the property was given to you by God, your boundary lines were holy. You didn't move anybody's boundary line. You just didn't do it because it was given by God. I used to have to practice the trumpet an hour a day, and we had a clock that my mother would trust me to set for an hour. And I would always know how many minutes I can move that forward, and she won't catch it. Well, and I knew, because I could fool my mother with the clock, that I could get by with it. Well, in Israel, your boundary lines are marked by God. Don't you play with those boundary lines. For example, look at Deuteronomy 19:14. Deuteronomy 19:14. A boundary line of your property could be marked in one of two ways. Number one, double furrow. Just plow a double furrow, and that is a boundary line. And you know that that's a double boundary line. Or they could be marked with a pile of rocks. And you could have rocks here, rocks here, rocks here, rocks here. And the square inside of those rocks was your property, and they were marked with those boundary lines. So, 19:14. And keep in mind, the land was the gift of God. Therefore, you shall not move your neighbor's boundary mark, which the ancients have set in your inheritance, which you shall inherit in the land that your God gives you to possess. God gave you that land. Don't you touch boundary lines. 27, same book, and verse 17. And this is strong. But when you see the land as the gift of God, you understand why. Cursed, this is 27:70. Cursed is he who moves his neighbor's boundary mark. And all the people said yes. They all agreed to the property rights in Israel. Proverbs 22. Proverbs chapter 22. And verse 28. It became proverbial in the book of wisdom that if you please God, here's one of the characteristics. Do not move the ancient boundary which your fathers have set. Chapter 23, verse 10. Do not move the ancient boundary. Now, one of the signs of evil times was boundary moving. Hosea 5:10. Hosea 5:10. And he's trying to express how bad things are. the princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. On them I will pour out my wrath like water. Now, if we don't understand the boundary line and it being given by God, what's that verse mean? The princes of Judah, you know how bad they are? They're as bad as people that mess up the double furrow out there. They're as bad as people that move the rocks that mark boundaries. Now, in our culture, would you note that as a, they are so bad. They park their car on their neighbor's property. Can you imagine it? Yeah. Easily. And you almost draws a smile because that's nothing terrible. Not in our culture. But it was in theirs. So you can see if that drops out, then the whole force of how bad Judah was. Verse 9, Ephraim, become a desolation in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel, I will declare what is sure. The princes of Judah have become like those who move a boundary. Could you believe they could be so bad? Well, viewed from our culture, that's not a strong expression of how bad they are. Viewed from the standpoint of their culture, it was. They felt so strongly about the property being a gift of God that one man was asked to sell his property, and he so viewed it as a gift from God that he died for it. You remember it? First Kings chapter 21. Remember Naboth? First Kings chapter 21. Verses 1 through 3. It came about after these days that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel beside the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake to Naboth, saying, give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is close to my house. And while I'll give you a better vineyard than that in its place, if you like, I will give you the price of it in money. That's not a bad deal. What is the law that the state can condemn property? Is it eminent domain? Okay. And they can give you hopefully a fair price for it. And often, I understand, it might not be a very bad. And Naboth is saying this, I'm not going to take it away from you. All I want is for you to sell it. And I'll give you the money for it, or I'll give you a better vineyard. And he really offered him a good deal. Naboth said to Ahab, the Lord forbid that I should give you the inheritance of my fathers. And it was regarded again as handed down from God. And you come down to verse 13. Two worthless men came in and sat before him, and the worthless man testified against him, even against Naboth, before the people, saying, Naboth cursed God and the king. So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. He wouldn't sell his property. So you see, that's a little view. Can you imagine going to the electric chair because you won't sell your property? And we look at that, we can't identify, can we? Because we would never die for a piece of property. We'd never do that. They would because of the way they viewed it. See the importance of crossing bridges? You got to understand this in the light of the way they thought. And if you won't cross the bridge, you don't understand what it's talking about. And classically, if you listen to teaching, that will be glossed right over. Why was he so stubborn in selling his vineyard? And the typical supposed Bible expositor never tells you. But he gets a great lesson out of it. But you should never make application without correct interpretation. Else all you're doing is using the Bible to teach human viewpoint. And that's certainly not sound. What if things got so bad that you had to sell your property? Leviticus 25, verse 10. So important was the fact that your property was a gift from God. So important was that. that if you had to sell it off because of hard times, provision was made for you to get it back. Verse 10, you shall thus consecrate the 50th year and proclaim a release through the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you, and each of you shall return to his own property, and each of you shall return to his own family. So that was so important that a time was set aside by God, year of jubilee, when you got your property back. And again, that's not the way we view property. Why did they look at it that way? God gave us this land. And because God gave us this land, it's passed down from father to son to father to son. We value it. We treasure it. And that is an integral part of Old Testament. Now, I think first thing in the morning, we will go to... we'll do geography tomorrow afternoon because that's a little bit longer. We'll go to tent dwellings and one-room houses. And when we do that, we will have a tent dwelling set up here. I think it's a little bigger than this. And then we'll look at the one-room dwelling and see passages that if you don't know what this is like, you don't know what the passage is talking about. Very simply, if you don't know what this was like, some of it even gets humorous. You will see that this roof has got a roller on top. They all had rollers on the roof because the roof was crossbars, and we'll see this tomorrow. And it had grass and mud on it. And you had, after the rains, to go up and roll your roof smooth again. And Solomon recalled that, and he said, you folks all know. When was the last time you had to move your bed? 5 times during the night because the roof was dripping on you. And Solomon makes a brilliant metaphor that the people would identify sleepily getting up and having to move. You move and here it starts again to drip. You move again and here it stops until it is driving you nuts. And Proverbs says, it's like living in a house with a contentious woman. The words of the contention woman are like a continual drip. The Chinese torture. Like a continual drip, and they could so identify with it. After the winter rains, everybody's house had grass on it. And you would see that grass, and I don't know what our timing is like here, but... we've got to, Celine and Heather. Heather, are you here? When did you guys put the grass on the roof? This morning? Okay, by the end of the week, what's green grass will probably be withered. And everybody had grass on their roof. And all the prophets consistently said, that is the metaphor for that which is transient. It's there for a few days, then it dries up. And over again, he will talk about being your confidence in Egypt is like grass on the roof. And what does that do for us? Doesn't do a thing. There's no grass on my roof, I don't think. What?
Just moss.
Just moss, okay, just moss. You got them in your gutters. Okay. But again, can you imagine having your house, everybody's house, at a certain time of the year, looking a certain way, with grass growing on it? And that was a powerful metaphor. A week of the hot Palestinian sun, and all your roofs, the grass will all be dead. And that's what it's like to trust in man. That's about how long it takes. You trust in Egypt, you make an alliance with Egypt. The son of God's wrath comes down, and it's all dried up, and you get whipped. You got a dry roof. And when you have a dry roof, you had a cracked one. When you had a cracked one, you had to go up and put more mud on it, more grass on it, roll it again to keep the... A lot of activity went up on that roof. It'd be strange to say that we're going to have a prayer meeting tonight after class, and it will be on the roof of my house. Not comprehensible. nothing unusual about Peter going up to the roof to pray. He gets hungry up there, and God lets down the sheet of good old Kansas City pork ribs, barbecue. Peter says never. Okay, we'll see you either at supper at 5:30 or back here tonight at 7 o'clock for Psalm 23.